Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Tzadi Zayin Amar Aleph by the two dots. Where it says, V'hashto, T'tani Avua D'shmu Bar of Yitzchak. Now that we have this memra from him, that Eluhein Yishanot, what is considered to be used fill-in, Koshi Yishben Ritzuot U'mikusharot. Used fill-in are ones that have straps in them, kusharot, and they are knotted, they are tied. Chadashot, what are considered to be new tefillin? There we had the machloket between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda as to whether you could take those in. That's Yesh Ben Ritzuot. They have straps in them. Velo mikusharot, but they're not knotted yet. So the key component is this knotting. If the knotting is done, then they're considered to be used. If they're not knotted yet, then they're not considered to be used. As Rashi says, what does that mean that they're mikusharot? Ken kesher shel tefillin. They're talking about the kesher of tefillin. Hasui kemin otiot. They have that special shape to them, the letters. Chenu kavua tamid. And it remains in there permanently. The kuli amma, everybody agrees, lo tarachinish. Nobody is going to go through that effort or expend that type of effort in order to have them not be tefillin. From here, it sounds like the reason by the chadashot is nothing to do with safek kmeya, whether it is or it is not a kmeya, but rather it has to do with whether they are knotted or not knotted. So why does that make a difference? So until now, we've assumed that the machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda was premised on this issue of whether you think new tefillin, do people expend that type of effort to make tefillin, even though they're not tefillin, which was Rabbi Yehuda's position. Therefore, he says, chadashot could be kameot, and you don't take them in. On the other hand, Rabbi Meir said that no matter what, you're going to take them in. Nobody expends that type of effort to make tefillin unless they really are tefillin. Now, we have Avu Dishmor Rav Yitzchak introduces the idea that the nodding, the mikusharot, the kesher, is the key component as to whether they are yishanot or chadashot. And the Gemara's assumption, as Rashi says over here, we are now changing the reason or the dynamic behind why something's called chadash and yashan. You can actually see it in the Ot Aleph of the Haggad Marav Renschenberg. There he quotes from Rashi at the bottom of the page. He says, the time of the chadashot, la mishum safek mehu. The reason for chadashot is not to do whether it's an amulet or not. At the time of the chadashot, yibesh ein mikusharot, because they're not tied. Vasur the koshran bishabbat, and you cannot tie them on Shabbat. Ve'minicham b'lo kesher ein zed derech malbush b'chol avilei masui. If you put them on without the tefillin knots, then you're not putting on tefillin. Ve'meir shari b'chadashot mishum desirilei. He believes the muter the koshran bishabbat kesher sheino shel kayama kesher merufe, because he believes you can put them on with a loose kesher, a kesher that's not permanent, so you can wear them like that. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes you have to put on the tefillin with the kesher shel kayama. If you put in the kesher shel kayama, you won't be able to do it on Shabbat. So that's why the kesher becomes a linchpin in whether you take it in or not. It's basically, are these tefillin ready to be put on, to be worn, or not to be worn? If you can wear them, then you can wear them in. If you can't wear them, then they need to stay out in the field. Because the kuli alma lo tarachinish. Everybody agrees that nobody expends the effort to make tefillin unless they really are tefillin. So the kameya is out of the picture. These are for sure tefillin. It's only a question, can I get them in or can I not get them in? Because do they have a kesher? Then do not have a kesher. So Gemara asks a very simple thing. Vili anvinu me'anev. Why don't you make a bow? Or basically, why do you need a permanent knot inside of the tefillin in order to take them in? Maybe you could just make a temporary knot for Shabbat and to carry them in. Amrav chista zotomeret aniva psula b'tefillin. So Chista's conclusion is, so we see from this, then an aniva does not suffice or does not work by tefillin. And since this is not the way that you would wear it during the weekday, it's not called a malbush, because you wouldn't wear it with this bow or with this temporary knot. Abaye has a simpler solution, which is based on the Mishnah and Shabbat that deals with knots, which is Abaye Amar, Rabbi Yehuda the Tamei. This is Rabbi Yehuda the Shita To, because in the Mishnah and Shabbat he says, Amar aniva kshir me'yatohi. A bow is equivalent of a kesher shell. Kayama. So it doesn't help you. You make a bow, it's the equivalent of putting in a permanent knot, and you can't do it on Shabbat anyway. So Gemara says now, time more than nivak shira mi'ayotohi. The only reason Rabbi Yehuda does not allow you to do this is because it's considered to be a kesher shel kayama on Shabbat. Halav hochi, had it not been for this, anivlahu, you could have used this bow. You didn't need a kesher shel kayama. So the Gemara says, in the world of Shabbat, I understand Rabbi Yehuda's position because he believes that a niva you cannot make on Shabbat. But then, if you say that, that means that the only problem here is Shabbat. Tefillin themselves are not the problem. And that means with tefillin themselves, you could have made an aniva. V'hamar Rav Yehuda braid Rav Shmuel bar Shilat mishmei the Rav. Kesher shel tefillin alacha l'Moshe misinayu. The kesher of tefillin is alacha l'Moshe misinay. And if that's the case, then we're talking about a special type of knot, not an aniva. V'amar Rav Nachman v'noyehen lebar. And their decorative side is to the outside. Two statements here about the din of tefillin. One is about the kesher, about the knot of the tefillin. The second one is about which way they must face. Rashi over here explains that halacha the Moshe Misinai. What is this halacha the Moshe Misinai? Heyach hu asui. How do you make the knot for the tefillin? Duhu domeh ledalit. It's made like a dalit that's on the tefillin shell rosh. Utfiratan asui kamin shin. And the box itself has a shin imprinted on it. Virutzuah kitanak vua behen. And you have a small ritzuah which is on the tefillin shell yad. You have the knot that makes the yud. Rosha kafuf. And its top is bent over with Dome the Yud. Rei Shakai. You have the Shem Hashem from the Shin, the Dalim, the Yud. You put them together. You have the Shem Hashem. A square, right. So square is not so simple. We'll see in 1 second maybe how to get around that problem. But if you really think there should be a Dalit over there, most likely it should be a Dalit. The square does not have a strong Makor within the Misora for making the square. It's an easier knot. If you want the Dalit there, it's not necessarily what you're really after. I think it's become to be more accepted, but in terms of foundation within the Misora, it's not such a strong foundation. If you don't have a strong minhag about it, it's very likely you should switch to a dalit and not have a square in the back. If you have a strong minhag, you can ask the Rav about it. Benoihen lebar. So Rashi says those otiyot should be lebar, should be facing outwards. Mechutz, she'enam klapei atfilin. They should not be towards the tefillin, but batim, in between the boxes, elekeneged marit ayin, but visible. So Rashi is clearly talking about the shin here, out of all of those items, because the shin is the only thing that could be inside the batim. So the shin should be on the outside, not internally. It should be visible to the people on the outside. So that's Rashi's interpretation of noyen lebar, which is not what he says in Minachot and other places. He says, Noyim the Bar in other places is that the black side of the Tzuot must face outwards. Others say Noyim the Bar is that the letters themselves, like the Dalit, has to be facing outwards. The Dalit is shaped in a way that you read it from the outside, not from the inside. So that's Noyim the Bar. According to others, Rashi here says it's the Shin on the Tefillin Shorosh should be on the outside. Tosafot here takes issue with Rashi, like he does in other places. We saw it twice in Shabbat, we saw it once in Brachot. Rashi here seems to indicate that the Ritzuot are part of the Shem Hashem, and they're part of the Alocha LeMoshe MiSinai, which means that there is inherent Kedusha in the Ritzuot, because, first of all, they have the Otiot of the Shem Hashem in them, and number two is that we have a specific Misora, Alocha LeMoshe MiSinai, as to the letters being made inside of the Ritzuot. Tosafot in all these places basically raises the issue, which is that the Gemara seems to indicate that the Ritzuot do not have this inherent Kedusha in them. The reason is that the Gemara wants to know why we need this limud. There's a limud that we have that tefillin must be made, the mantiyeh Torat Hashem beficha. The Torat Hashem must be in your mouth. The Gemara darshins on that Torat Hashem must be in your mouth is minha mutar beficha. Only things that you can eat can you make your tefillin out of. So the Gemara says, l'mai hilchoto, why do I need this halacha? If it's for the shin on the tefillin, if it's for the tefillin themselves, they have inherent kedusha, of course, they have to be made from kosher animals. Where do I need this limud for? The Gemara's conclusion is I need it for the ritzuot. Well, if I need it for the ritzuot, that implies that the Gemara thinks that only the shin has kedusha in it. The ritzuot themselves do not have kedusha inside of them. And so because of that, the Tosafot says, "Velo matzino v'shum makom she'akesher karui dalit." Never do we find that the kesher has to be made as a dalit. That's what I was just saying. Wait a second, we'll see that the Tosafot here says that it's not halacha l'moshe misinai, because otherwise the ritzuot would have a certain amount of inherent kedusha to them, which we don't see in other places in the Gemara. We seem to see that the ritzuot have a different level of kedusha and require specifically limudim outside of what the normal tefillin or boxes require. And therefore, Tosafot concludes against Rashi that making of these letters within the ritzuot is not halacha l'moshe misinai. It's a very big difference if you think the otiyot are halacha l'moshe misinai versus if you think they are minhag. Even whether they're strong minhag, there's still nothing like a halacha l'moshe misinai. The other thing Tosafot over here points out, v'noyim lebar, Perish Ruri, like the Oruch, the noya kesher yifne letzar chutz, Oto tzad shinireh ke'ein dalet. Here says the nicer side should be on the outside, the side that looks like a dalet. So even though he thinks that the dalet is not necessarily halacha l'moshe m'sinai, he still thinks that the dalet should be read from the outside. He acknowledges that there is a dalet in the kesher shel tefillin, but he says it makes sure that it's facing outward. And again, I mentioned to you that others say that it has to do with the straps themselves, but the black side of the strap should be facing out and not the white side of the strap. Then the other thing that the Rabbeinu Tam notes here, it's a very interesting machloket between the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rabbeinu Eliyahu in the Gemara Menachot. The Gemara Menachot says that when it comes to making the brocha on the tefillin, when do you make the brocha on the tefillin? He said, Mishat hanacha ad shat kshira. From the time that you place them on till the time that you knot them. Based on that, the Rabbeinu Eliyahu says that you have to knot your tefillin every day. In order to put your tefillin on every day, you must make the knot for the tefillin daily. In order to fulfill this Gemara, the Gemara says here, you hanacha and then kshira. And therefore you have to place them on and you have to knot them. And that means both for tefillin shoyad, which we quasi knot today still, but more importantly for the tefillin shorosh. That every day when you put on the tefillin shorosh, you should make the kesher. The Rabbeinu Tam over there disagrees and says the tefillin shorosh have a kesher already. And the kshira over here doesn't mean to make the knot daily, but putting on the kesher. But he does say that the kesher is there permanently, and that you can leave it there. And the Rabbeinu Tam mentions over here that our Gemara is a rayo. It's a proof to Rabbeinu Tam's position because our Gemara seems to indicate that the kesher shel tefillin is a kesher shel kayama. It's a permanent knot. Well, if you take the knot out every day, it's not a permanent knot. It's only a permanent knot if it's permanently there. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says here from this Gemara. It sounds like me. The knot's there permanently, and then you just put on the tefillin shel rosh. But that does have interesting implications in terms of the tefillin shel yad, which is that you need a kesher. So on the tefillin shel rosh, the kesher is already pre-made. But with regards to the tefillin shel yad, there isn't a pre-made kesher. So you have to make a kesher in order to hold the tefillin on your arm. So we do it by wrapping tefillin around the arm. But what ends up happening, and this is very interesting, is that when we wrap the tefillin shel yad around the arm, we do not make a knot in them. We stop. And then we put on the tefillin shel rosh. And then only afterwards we finish and make the knot on the tefillin shel yad. So the Mishkanot Yaakov, who is a perush on Menachot, he is an Achron, he's the brother of the Keren Ora, writes a perush that is on the level of the Rishonim, and is really considered to be one of the main perushim on the Gemara in Menachot, because he writes like a Rishon. And there he mentions the fact that he thinks that it might be the case that you have to, when you put on the tefillin shel yad, that not only do you have to put them on and then wrap them around your hand and wait, put on the rosh, but you should go all the way to the end and knot them. Because unless you knot the tefillin on your hand, they're not considered to be on. Because if they can unravel themselves, then you haven't been ukshar them. You haven't put them on your arm. And you need to do a kshira. You need to tie them onto your arm. Rav Soloveitchik actually had the minhag that he would put on his tefillin shiyad all the way through the knotting on his hand. He would not wait, not knot his hand, and then put on his tefillin shel rosh, and then finish off the tefillin shel yad. He would finish the tefillin shel yad completely when he put on his tefillin shel yad, and then only afterwards would he put on his tefillin shel rosh. But because of this issue of kshira, that you need to put on the tefillin, you have to have a knot on them. So that, again, the shel rosh is pre-made, but that of the shel yad is not, and you make it each day. And without the knot, the tefillin aren't on. If they can unravel by themselves, they're not on. That's interesting. The Sfaradim, when they put on their tefillin shel yad, they actually wrap the ritzuot around the bayit itself on their arm. Not only around their arms, but around the bayit itself, which has halachic issues in terms of putting ritzuot on top of the bayit, so which don't have the same level of kedusha, but put on there. But since they're doing it derech shira, then the poskim seem to allow it to go. But that also might be related to what we're saying over here. The idea of fastening the bayit to the arm, or the kshira, is important, and therefore going around the bayit itself has value in terms of the kshira. The other thing that we mentioned yesterday in terms of the Aruch HaShulchan, who talked about that the real definition of yad is your palm of your hand, and by extension, the whole arm is called yad, because it's the mover and shaker of the hand, and therefore everything's called yad, and that's why we place it up on the upper part, even though the ikar is the hand. Turns out to be very interesting, because where do we end up knotting the tefillin? On the yad itself, on the hand itself, on the palm of the hand. So even though Chazal darshan ukshartam leota yadecha to be up by the bicep area, nevertheless, in the end, when we knot the tefillin shel yad, we knot them on the hand. back to the original meaning of the word yad, that we make it there. And it might be somewhat of a manifestation of the underlying meaning of yad, is that we knot it on the palm of the hand rather than up at the top. As Rabbeinu Tam says here, it's very important, this idea of knotting the tefillin or locking the tefillin in place so they cannot unravel is something that is very important. Machloket Rabbeinu Eliyahu and Rabbeinu Tam in the Gemara and Menachot. And over here, the Rabbeinu Tam says the fact that we require Kesher She'el Kayama is a proof to his position. So now the Gemara says, the problem we have here is that the Gemara made a suggestion that we should have made a bow here instead of making a knot. The Gemara says you can't make a bow according to Abaye because a bow will not suffice. You have a need for a kesher. Kesher, l'alacha l'moshe misinai. So you can't do anything else. So the Gemara says, you're right. You need the kesher shel kayama, quote unquote. But that kesher that you require is not all about permanence. It's about the shaping of the kesher, the way that you make the kesher. So you'll make a bow that simulates the kshira. So you're right. There is a lacha l'moshe misinai, but you might be able to accomplish that even through an aniva. You might be able to accomplish that even through a bow of some sort, even though that may not be the best way to do it, but it's still possible to do it that way. Since it's possible to do it that way, we asked, at least let's try to do this. And the Gemara rejected it because it's Rabbi Yehuda Lashitate who says that aniva doesn't work. Aniva is no better than making a kesher shel kayama. And that's why we're stuck with the tefillin out in the field because they don't have a kesher on them. Person who purchased tefillin for someone who is not an expert. So first of all, you shouldn't be doing that. You should not be buying tefillin from an enu mumche. As Tosfot brings, quotes the Gemara from Menachot, that you must buy tefillin from a mumche. Part of buying tefillin is you got to buy it from people who are trustworthy, because they're not so easy to check, even though the Gemara Menachot says you can check them. There are certain aspects of it that you can check. There are other aspects which are much more difficult to check, including the issues of lishma and certain other things that they do to the tefillin, which you would only know if you can trust the person. Doesn't mean that you have to go to the original sofer. You have to go to someone who is well-versed in Hilchot Tefillin as well as reliable with regards to tefillin. If you happen to get these from an enu mumche, they're trafficking in them in the marketplace, and you buy it from someone who's not the mumche. Budeg shtayim shel yad v'achad shel rosh. You check two shel yad and one shel rosh. Shtayim shel rosh v'achad shel yad. Or two of the rosh and one shel yad. In order to establish what seemed to be a chazaka over here, you check three of them, and you find three of them to be ksherim, we assume that they are all ksherim. Where it says, monafshach. I don't understand. Im echad gavra kozavin. If he's buying them from one individual, even though he's trading with a broker of some sort, but the broker bought them all from one person. So now, if he's buying them, livdok, oshalosho yad, oshalosho rosh. Why do I need to have two from one and then one from the other? Do three shalosh, three shal yad. It shouldn't matter how I get the composition of the three. On the other hand, if this broker that you bought from is buying tefillin from multiple people, then you have to check all of them because you can't establish a chazaka. Just because you check two or three of them doesn't mean that the remainder of them are kshirim, because they could be from different people. So when it says, lo lemechad gavra zavin, purchased it from one individual, ubeinan demit mechei b'shel yad b'shel rosh. We need to know for sure that he's a mumche in both shel yad and shel rosh. We need him to establish that fact, not only that he made three tefillin that are good, we need to know that he made three tefillin, including one that was yad and one was shel rosh, that he made that were good. Where it says, ini, is that really true? Vatani rabba bar shmuel b'tfilin budek shalosh shel yad v'shel rosh. My love, o shalosh shel yad, o shalosh shel rosh. The havamina is, maybe I should check either three of yad and three of rosh. I mean, I could do three of any type. I don't need to do three of a mix. Lo, shalosh, if I check three of them. Shalosh means you have to do a total of three. Mehen shel yad, mehen shel rosh. They can be comprised of a mixture of yad and rosh. As long as you have a mixture of them, at least touch one rosh and one yad, then you're fine. So basically, you have to check one rosh, one yad, and the third one can be whatever you want, which is either a rosh or a yad, which will give you two of one and one of the other. V'anetani Rav Kahana b'tfilin budeg shtayim shel yad b'shel rosh. Don't we have a memory from Rav Kahana that by tfilin you have to check two of yad or two of rosh? Or the way we're reading it now would be two, one yad, one rosh. So why is two a sufficient when we're saying now that you need three? Where it says, Hamani Rabihi. That memory that's brought from Rav Kahana, that brighta that Rav Kahana is bringing, is based on the position of Rabbi. Damar betrays Zimni Avi Chazaka. The machloket between Rabbi and the Chachamim as to how many times you need in order to establish a Chazaka. Rabbi says you need two times. is a chazaka. That means the third time already we don't act on it, or we do act on it. Chachamim say you need three times to establish a chazaka. It's only on the fourth time do we utilize the chazaka. I Rabbi, Eima Seifa. If Rabbi is the author of that braita, what about the latter half there? Which says, V'chein b'tzevet sheni, v'chein b'tzevet ashlishi. If you find bundles of fill-in, you have to check on the second one, and you have to check on the third one. Well, why are you checking fill-in in the first, second, and third bundle if this is Rabbi? For Rabbi, already if you check the second bundle, that should be sufficient. Be Rabbi, shlishi mi'idlai. Why do you need a third one? Mo de Rabbi b'tzvatim. Rabbi agrees that when you have these tzvatim, these bundles, the mitrei tlati gavri zavin. Clear that he bought them for two or three different people. Each bundle likely came from one individual. So when you go and check the bundle, you don't have to check the whole bundle. You have to check two out of the pile in the bundle and establish a chazaka for that pile. But that chazaka is not going to help you on the next bundle, because the next bundle likely came from another person. And so you can't create a cross chazaka because you're dealing with a new type of tefillin. You have to check those two in that second pile. And in the third pile, you have to check two. Mar says, Yochi, afilu revi nami, afilu chamishi nami. Well, what you're saying now is it doesn't matter how many piles you have. You have to check two out of each pile in order to establish a chazaka for each pile. Why does the mishnah or the braita stop at three? It should have kept going. Where it says, ain't ochanami. Yeah, you're right. It would go up to four or five. And the reason that it says three is to take it out of the world of chazaka. For Rebbe, the world of chazaka is two. So he says you have to even check the third one. Tells you there is no chazaka here. That's what three means. Three, to him, is the equivalent of saying no chazaka here, because if there was a chazaka, you would end at two. The fact that we make you go into three means, you're right, you're going to keep checking all of them, because there is no chazaka over here. Therefore, even the fourth or fifth ones are going to require checking, because we assume that each bundle came from a different individual, and you have to establish a chazaka with regards to each bundle, in order to make sure that these tefillin are shirim. Matzan tzvatin or krichot. Our Mishnah said that if you find them out in the field when they are bundled up or tied up, then you do not bring them in, you leave them out in the field. Either you cover them or you wait with them out in the field. Gemara says, my tzvatin, my krichot. What's the difference between a tzevet and a krich? Samar Yehuda, Amarav, hein hein tzvatin, hein hein krichot. It's identical. They're synonyms. For each other, just mean bundle. So then, why does the Mishnah enumerate them separately? It says, because tzvatim are zave zave, which is the equivalent of zuge zuge. Tzvatim are put together in pairs. That means that you have a shoyad shorosh that are put together. And you have numerous in this bundle. You have a bunch of shoyad shorosh, but equal amounts of shoyad shorosh. Krichot, the krichantuva. Krichot means that there are a whole bunch of them bundled together, meaning kehadodi. You don't have pairs of them in there. You can have a bundle of al shoyad, a bundle of al shorosh. They're not a bundle that includes even numbers of shorosh and shoyad. Mach Shekhalei and Mevian said in the Mishnah, in the case where you find these bundles, you stay out there with them until the end of Shabbat, and then you bring them in. And we asked on the Mishnah, and this is what the Gemara is going to ask here, well, how come the Reish of the Mishnah says you wear them in, you go in and out wearing them in, and the Sefer of the Mishnah says you got to stay out there with them? What is that threshold for determining when you stay out there and when you bring them in? That's what the Gemara asks now. V'amai, lalinu, zug zug. Why do you got to wait out there until it's dark, until Shabbat is over, and bring them in? You should wear them in, pair by pair. To me, it was explained what my father said. Now, what he says, what my father said, because it's Rav Yitzchak, Brei de Rav Yehuda. And Rav Yitzchak, Brei de Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda, the Talmud of Rav, he's explaining what was said over here, Ayidei Rav, or by his father. So the possibility over here of saying Abba, Abba could refer to his father, which is most likely the explanation here, meaning Rabbi Yehuda, but it could also mean Abba is Rav, that we saw as the name for Rav. So you could say, Yitzchak Brei de Rav Yehuda says that memra of Rav was explained to me. So either way, it could be, because we saw Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav were the ones who commented on the Tzvatim and the Krichot before. It's clear that they have memrot about this Tfilin, about this Krichot and Tzvatim, and therefore it's possible that Abba here most likely refers to Rabbi Yehuda, but could even be referring to Rav. Basically a timing issue. If you have sufficient time left in the day, by which, if you go pair by pair, in, out, you complete the task before Shabbat, go ahead, do that, and finish it off before Shabbat. Velo, if you're not going to finish the task before Shabbat is over, then why bother? Why bother taking them in zug, zug? You're going to have to come out here after Shabbat anyway to get the remainder, because you'll never complete the task before Shabbat's over. Let's just make it simple. Wait out there, and bring them all in after Shabbat's over. Because you're going to be engaged in this for the rest of the day anyway. You may as well just stay there and bring them all in after Shabbat in one shot, instead of wearing them in zug, zug. both from the perspective of why violate Shabbat, or whatever, use or utilize whatever dispensation you need to wear them in on Shabbat, because you're going to have to bring them in after Shabbat anyway, the remainder. And number two, from the perspective of why expend that type of effort, when in the end you're going to have to come out at night, you may as well just do it all at one shot when you come out at night. So that'll be the threshold for by which we determine whether you should stay out there and watch them versus you should carry them in pair by pair. It has to do with the amount of time and the number of pairs. Ubisakanam mechasan vicholich. The end of our Mishnah says, in the time of sakana, you cover them up and you go. So we said before, what is the shat sakana? Is listim. There are robbers out there. There are thieves out there. And that's why he wanted to cover them out. He's afraid to stay out there. He's afraid to watch them until nightfall. So he covers them up and he leaves them. Sakana in the Gemara can manifest itself in different ways. Sakana can be from robbers. Sakana can also be from the Zerat HaMalchut, which is that the government puts out decrees that say one may not wear tefillin. So I mentioned that back in the Mishnah, that possibility, even though back there the Rishonim don't explain it that way, that's because the Gemara eventually does get to this. So the Gemara now asks the question. When in time of danger, you bring them in, less than four amot. You walk, stop, in order to bring them in without making any fanfare, but you do it less than four amot. So why, in one place, do we say you bring them in? Why does that solve your problem? If it's sakana that you bring it in, pachol pachol mi'arba amot, why does that help you? So Amarav lo gash, abisakanat nachri, abisakanat listim. Depends on what type of sakana you're running into. One is sakanat nachri. So Rashi explains over here, sakanat nachri means we're afraid of the ovdei gulim, the mevazel the tefillin, that they're going to be mevazel the tefillin, they're going to ruin the tefillin, they're not going to treat them properly. So in that case, we tell you to bring them in, because we don't want you to leave them in the field. You don't want to stay in the field because of the listim. On the other hand, we don't want them left in the field because of the problem of what they will do to them. So we tell you to bring them in, means you walk, you stop before 4 amot are over, so you have an akira and anacha within the 4 amot. The other hand, habisakanat listim. Listim are the Jewish marauders, the Jewish thieves. We've met up with these thieves before. These are the thieves that will steal your money, kill you, but they will not be mevazet tefillin. They have a lot of respect for dvarim shebekdusha, and therefore they only kill and steal. They do not ruin the tefillin. So because of that, we are okay with you leaving them out in the field covered, because even if they find them, they're not going to do anything that is degrading to the tefillin. Amalei Abaye, b'mai ukimta l'mitnitin. Had a Jew set up our Mishnah? B'sakanat uveid gulilim. It's with the sakana of the nachri. Eima seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half there? It says, Rabbi Shimon Omer, unan l'chaveiro, v'chaveiro, l'chaveiro, that you make this human chain. So then he says, koshkin to avshamilto. Well, then for sure it's going to make it that we have a big demonstration over here. This is going to make a lot of noise. When it says, achsure mechsura, it's missing a part of the Mishnah, which is, v'hochiktoni, b'med v'imamurim. When is that true? So Rashi has a different girsa. If you look in Rashi right now, Rashi has a girsa which is, what did you set up our Mishnah? B'sakanat listim. The sakana of listim, which means that our Mishnah is a case of the Jewish marauders. We're not afraid of them. And so you can cover them and leave in the field. Yet, Rabbi Shimon says, make a human chain and take them in. Why would you make a human chain to take them in if you could leave them out in the field securely? Not worry about it. Here you're going to make a big stink. You're going to be publicly violating, quote-unquote, the Shabbat in order to bring them to fill in instead of quietly just leaving them recovered out in the field. Why would Rabbi Shimon ever suggest that? So, Ema Seifa, that's the question on by Rabbi Shimon. The answer to the Gemara is, no, it's Chasurei Mechsera. That means, where do we say that you should leave them out of the field and cover them? That's when we're talking about listim, Jewish marauders. But, b'sakanat nachri, avodat gedidim, over there you bring them in, pachol pachol midalat amot, because you can't leave them out of the field, they'll be mevazed them. That's the way Rashi has the girsa. And then he says, lashon acher. He says, I have a different way of reading this, v'ikar. This is the proper way to read it. And you can see the Rabbeinu Chananel reads it the same way, that the distinction that he makes between the listim and the oved gochavim is different, which is, Matnitan b'sakanat oved gulalim. In order not to have to change the girsa in the sperm like we have it, the girsa that we have in our Gemara, not the girsa that we read in Rashi, which is that the Mishnah is talking about sakanat oved gulalim. Shegazu gezerash lo yanichu tefillin. So the difference between Nochri and Listim is they're both talking about non-Jews. Just a question of what the problem is. Problem of Nochri or Abat Galilim is a problem of gzerat machut. Problem of a gzerat from the government that you're not allowed to wear tefillin. The problem of Listim is that you have these non-Jewish marauders coming around that are going to be mazel tefillin. They're going to degrade the tefillin, and therefore you don't want to leave them out in the field. And so the Gemara explains that's the difference between them. The difference between mechasan ve'oleich, when do you cover them and leave? That's when they're gzeret amachut. You don't want to engage with these tefillin because you could get yourself killed for that. So we don't tell you to bring them in. We tell them cover them up and leave them in the field. The bright that it says pacha pacha midalat amot, that's talking about when you're talking about listim. You're worried about staying out in the field and waiting till nightfall. You're scared of being there. So what do? You carry them in pacha pacha midalat amot to avoid the problem of bizayon. But there's no fear for your life that you're going to get killed if you take in tefillin, because we're talking about marauders that are not interested in you. They're interested in taking your money or killing you out in the field, not with you walking in with the tefillin. So that's the way to explain it. Then, the question of the Gemara is, how did you explain our Mishnah? Our Mishnah is a case of gzerat machut, a case where the government said no tefillin. So Gemara says, aim a safer. What are you going to do with Rabbi Shimon then? What does Rabbi Shimon say the solution? Make a human chain. Make a human chain, the government's gonna know that you're talking about tefillin. You make a huge splash. We're bringing in the tefillin. Everybody's gonna know that. The government's gonna get all over you about that. So how could that be the solution? That's what the Gemara says. Chasurei mechzera. The first half is talking about dvarim amurim, is what we're talking about. Over at gulilim, we're talking about a governmental degree. That's the case you cover them and leave them. Aval, in a case where we're talking about listim, in that case, we tell you to bring them in pachot pachot midalat amot. And that, Rabbi Shimon says, don't do pachot pachot midalat amot, make a human chain. I prefer you do a human chain than you do pachot pachot midalat amot, because less likely that you violate Shabbat in that way. You have more people involved, you don't have to do the starting and stopping, you just pass it from one to the next. And it makes it that, even though it's more public display, nevertheless, it's less likely to end up in a problem of chilul Shabbat. Now, it seems that Tosfot says here that if it's impossible to make a human chain, that Rabbi Shimon would agree that you do pacha pacha midalat amot, because he's only offering that as an alternative, not saying that the other one is not possible, he's just saying I have a better alternative. The better alternative is to make the human chain. But if I don't have that option, then I would allow you to do it pacha pacha midalat amot. So Rashi favors that second explanation, both because it allows us to leave the girsa the way we have it in our Gemara, as well as he says that the word avshe milsa seems to be more like what we're saying now. Avshe milsa is not an issue with regards to Shabbat. Violation of Shabbat of avshe milsa has to do with the fact of being discovered, and relationship to the problem that's at hand. What's the fear? And the human chain is something that, according to the Gemara, is going to cause a more of a problem by making the human chain. So why would we do it? And that's why we come up with this chasurei mechzera. Right now, next, we continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Natlan Lechaveiro, you make this human chain. But Makam Ifligay, what's the makhluk here between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakama? Marsar Pacha Me'abra Amot Adip. He thinks that taking in less than 4 amot at a time is better. De'i Amar, no dan lechaviro, v'chaviro lechaviro. If you give them to everyone, avshe milta d'shabbat, then you cause a big display or a big stink about Shabbat. And we don't want that. We don't want to make this into a public display of chilul Shabbat that people are going to become mimaz of the Shabbat. So why would you do that? We'd rather you do it in a quiet way. Mar saver, no dan lechaviro, adiv, di amar, molichem pachom, me'arba mot. If we let you do this yourself and go less than 4 mot each time, zimn de lavadate. Sometimes he's just not going to focus, or he's not going to pay attention. It's going to be in violation of Shabbat for carrying 4 amot in Rishut Rabim. We'd rather have other people involved so that it reminds you what to do, and there's not less risk of actually moving it 4 amot. So it's a question of which risk we're willing to take. The Tanakhama says we're not willing to take the risk of others getting involved and making a big display of Chilul Shabbat. We're willing to take the risk that you will walk more than 4 amot. I mean, we don't assume you're going to do that. And Rav Shimon says the other way around. We'd rather have it be a public display and have a lot of people involved. So that way we're certain there's going to be no chilul Shabbat over here. The risk that others might be mevazeh Shabbat from that we're not going to worry about. Chen b'no. So the Mishnah can come afterwards and says, also for your son, you can make this human chain. B'no, my bayi hotom. What's his son doing out in the field? Tvei menashe tana, b'shiyal dato imo b'sadeh. She gave birth out in the field, whether she was on her way somewhere, or that's where the midwife was, she gave birth out in the field. Maya filu hein meya. What does that mean? Even if you have 100 people. Dafta b'kashi le yoda kilachi adifa. Even though the handling by so many people is not good for this newborn baby, nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon believes that that's a better way to deal with it, and we're going to insist that you make this human chain and not carry him. Pacha pacha midalat amot. Even though there is some detriment to having him being handled by so many people. Rehudu Omer, So this is the last line in the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yehuda said, "Noten adam chavit." Person can give a barrel, and they can use this human chain to move a barrel, and even go outside the tchum. It says, "Lately, the Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have this Mishnah, which is it's not beima vakilim kuraglei abalim." That objects that are owned by people, their tchum is determined by their owner. So what, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think that? He thinks you can move this barrel past the point where the owner can go because you have a human chain? Why should that work? Reish Lakish, Mishum Levi Sabo. So like he says in the name of the elder Levi, Hachum Ha'eskinan, Bim'aran Michavit L'Chavit. Same right here where he's pouring the contents of the barrels from barrel to barrel. He's not actually moving the barrels, they're pouring the contents. Right, they're moving the contents, not the barrels themselves. And this is Rabbi Yehuda the Shita. The Mar Mayim Behem Mamash. That Mayim does not have substance to it with regards to Shabbat. It's not Mishnah again in Beitza. Rabbi Yehuda Poter B'Mayim B'nei Shein Behem Mamash. Rabbi Yehuda says that the Mayim we don't worry about because they don't have any real parts of them. My Lo Talich Zu can't carry or move this item. Item being the Chavit itself. It says no Lo Yaleich Mashib Zu. Just means don't take what's inside of it, not it itself, but what's inside or contained inside of it. When the Rabbanan respond to him, say Lo Talich Zu, that this shouldn't go past this point. It sounds like that item shouldn't go past. So Mar says no Lo Yaleich Mashib Zu. You tell me Raglei Abalim. Read it that way. That read it as the contents of this item shouldn't go past where the Balim could go. So now, Imar Dishmait Leh the Rabbi Yehuda, we heard in the Gemara Beit Sah, where does Rabbi Yehuda say this thing that water doesn't count? Hecha de Balian Beisa. That's when they're absorbed into the dough. The case here is where you have two women. One woman is contributing the water, and one woman is contributing the kamach, the flour. And then they make it into dough. These two women have different chumin. So then the Mishnah says that you're stuck. That loaf of bread, that dough can only go as far as where both women can go. And now if both women are at the end of their tchum, then it can't move the dough from there. Yehuda comes along and says, the woman with the water is irrelevant. Because the water is no longer there. After you make the dough, the water is no longer apparent or visible. Because of that, the water ain't bo mamash. And that's why there's no tchum for the water. We ignore the tchum of the water. So that's what a Reish Lakish, in the name of Levi Saba, was trying to do here. He's saying, look, Rabbi Yehuda doesn't think water is a problem, and that's why you can pour it from Chavit to Chavit, it doesn't have a tchum. Gemara says, wait a minute, that's not true. The only reason Rabbi Yehuda says by the dough that the water doesn't have a tchum is because it's absorbed. It's not visible. But otherwise, he would not say that. So Gemara says, how do I know that? Because we have another member by Rabbi Yehuda. He says, the idno beinayu misha mayitay, if they're physically present, they're extant, the water's still there, who thinks that you can carry them? Hashta b'kdeira. But it came to a pot, a cooking pot, Amar Rav Yehuda lo batle. Over there he says they're not batel. Be'enayu batle? Then you're going to say when they're physically, you're pouring the liquid itself, forget about it being in a cooking pot. They're just water. Over there you're going to think he's ixi batel. The Tanya, we have a bright Rav Yehuda mer, maimu melach b'telim b'isa. Water and salt are nullified, as if non-existent when it comes to dough, because they're absorbed inside of it. Ve'ein b'telim b'kteira. But that's not true when you're cooking something. They're not batel mipnei rotva, because it has soup, gravy, or liquid. It's still moist. It still has, the moisture itself is still apparent, and the liquid is still apparent in this cooked item, as opposed to the dough where it's completely gone, where it's completely absorbed into the solid at this point in time. Ela amarova. Rabbi makes a different suggestion. Talking about a case where the barrel has shvita, and the water itself doesn't have shvita. The barrel is nullified or batel to the water. The water is the ikar here. The barrel is secondary or subsidiary to the water. And because of that, the water has no shvita. You can keep moving it. The barrel that does have its shvita, you couldn't move it by itself. But now that the water is the ikar, you can move it because of the water. So the ketanan, we have a similar idea in the Elochot of Shabbat. If you carry a live person out on a bed, patur af al mita. That you're also patur on the bed itself. You're not carrying the bed out. You're carrying the person out. The person happens to be on a bed. That's the vehicle for carrying out the person. Since it's the vehicle for carrying out the person, again, it's subsidiary or it's secondary to the person themselves. And if you carry a live person on Shabbat, you're not chayam midoraita, because we have a principle of chay, to say it atzmo. Tosafot over here asked the same question that he asked in the Gemara on Shabbat. Well, okay, even if chay is no say atzmo, it's still your yochov, and he's eno yochov. You can carry him, but he can't carry himself, or he can't carry you. So in that case, why is it that you're not chayav? In that case, when you have yochol and eno yochol, we make the yochol chayav. So the re-answer is, because, to become a gom, miftar ocha, mishum de gamrin and kol tzaot mi mishkan. We learn all types of hatza'ah mina mishkan. V'sham lo yayu nosim balei chayim. They never carried any live items in the mishkan. Everything was dead when they carried it. And so therefore, we learn out hotza'ah from the mishkan. He doesn't say it here, but this is very similar to shitata tosafot and Shabbat. And when it comes to the malacha of hotza'ah, it's a malacha grua. It's a subpar malacha. Because it's a subpar malacha, we only are mechayiv you if we can find a paradigm like that in the Mishkan. Exact paradigm. With other malachot, we say as long as it carries out the toilet, the purpose that it was used for in the Mishkan, that's enough. It doesn't have to be exactly like you did in the Mishkan. The malacha just has to have the same purpose as in the Mishkan. Whereas by hotza'ah, we have a higher threshold and we say, no, it's got to be done in the Mishkan. Why? Because, as Tosafot says in Shabbat, hotza'ah is a malacha grua. It's not a real malacha. Since it's not a real malacha, only if it's exactly like it was in the Mishkan do we say that you are chayav. So that's a little bit of what he's invoking over here. They never carried live animals in the Mishkan. So even though technically he should have been chayav, but since there was no paradigm like that in the Mishkan, we don't make you chayav for carrying out a chay. Nevertheless, what Rav is after over here is this Mishnah, which tells you that the bed is a subsidiary to the mate himself. And the same thing, amotzi ochlim bepachot mikishur. You take out food that is less than the shiur that would make you chayav in Shabbat, but you take it out of utensil, you'd be chayav for, still, you're patur af ala kli. For the kli, you're also patur, mivnesha kli tafelo. The kli is only the vehicle for carrying the food, it's not separate. So because of that, even though you're carrying out a kli that would, by itself, if you did it, you'd be chayav. Since you're carrying food inside of it and using it as a vehicle to carry the food, since the food doesn't have the shiur, you're not chayav in the kli as well. So you see that these containers themselves are tafel, to the main item. So it's over here. The chavit is tefel to the water. The water doesn't have its chum. The barrel does have its chum, but the barrel becomes irrelevant because you're utilizing it to move the water. So meiti Rav Yosef, Rav Yudu, Amer b'shayara. This din is by a shayara. There's a caravan. People are traveling and they don't have water. This dispensation of giving the barrel to move the water is only for a shayara, where they're now encamped in the middle of the fields and they have no water. And they need water. So they have this dispensation because they need water to do this human chain. But otherwise, we wouldn't give that dispensation. Whereas according to you, it shouldn't make a difference whether it's a shayra or not. For you, it's simply an issue of tchum. If the water doesn't have a tchum, why does it matter if it's a shayra or not a shayra? El Amar Rav Yosef ki tana nami b'matitan b'shayra tanan. Our mission is talking about a shayra. And that's why Rav Yehuda allows it here. He allows the violation of tchum because of this need to take care of the people and have them have water. Without the water, they can't live out in the field, so they're stuck. Abaye Amar b'shayra afilu chavit shekanta shvita umayim shekanu shvita. That when it comes to a shayra, it can even be with a chavit that has shvita and water that has shvita, meaning that they both have tchum. Shelo b'shayra, when you don't have this dispensation shayra, then chavit shekanta shvita umayim shelo kanu shvita. So he basically says, okay, we'll use this principle of Rava, but include or modify it to deal with Rav Yosef's question. Which is, Rav Yosef says, Shayera, this seems to be a part of this din that Rav Yehuda has. So Bai says, you're right. When it comes to the Shayera, you have full dispensation, which means it doesn't matter that the Chavit or the water both have Tchum in them. You can carry it because we give you special permission because you're in a Shayera. Whereas when you're not in a Shayera position, then we're going to demand that you keep within the Tchum. So that a case only if the water, it does not have shvita, do you bring it along? So how do you have a case where the barrel has shvita and the water doesn't have shvita? Is it a case where the barrel is owned by an individual and that's why it has shvita? Whereas the mayim doesn't have shvita because it was filled from a mayan or a nahar on Shabbat itself. And so when you fill them up in there, it's kiraglei kol adam. We said before that that means that it was like anybody. Whoever takes them or uses them, that's what they become like. They are somewhat amorphous. Now the truth is it means it's really like the person who draws them. That's what we really say, Kiragle Kol Adam. Here we're using this looser definition that it really doesn't have tchum. So Rav Ashi says, Amar Acha Bavchit Chefker Askinen, Umayim Tefker Askinen. Here we're dealing with the chavit and water that are not owned by anybody. So if they're not owned by anybody, so man amrulo. So in the Mishnah, who responds to them? If you have Hefker, there's no Shvita by Hefker. Rabbi Yehuda, in the Mishnah, the Chachamim will answer and say amrulo. They said to him, so who's saying to them, wait, we don't let you go outside the tchum. Why not? It's a Hefker. Why should it be a problem? So when I said that's Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who Yochananuri bumped in early in the Masechta, which is Damar Chefzei Efker Konim Shvita. He believes that Chefzei Efker are Konim Shvita wherever they are coming into Shabbat. Forget about owners. Wherever you come into Shabbat, that's where they're Konim Shvita. My lo te'aleich zo yotemi raglei ablalim. So what does it mean that this item shouldn't be moved more than the balim? Right, there's no balim over here. It shouldn't go any further than utensils that would have had balim. Had these utensils had balim, you wouldn't go past the tchum. So too, wherever they were coming into Shabbat, that's where they were kona shvita, and that's the equivalent of where their baal was. And because of that, you can't carry them past that point. So that's the way they'll explain the Mishnah, or the argument in the Mishnah between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim of the Mishnah. Tosafot over here says that the Hefzer Hefker, you have to say that they can't remain Hefker. Once a person picks them up, they're no longer Hefker. And we say before that if they pick them up, then it becomes, the Hefker item becomes like the Balim. They take on the property of the Balim. Well, how do you solve the problem of making them Hefzer Hefker? It just means you have to wait for someone as soon as they pick it up, then it becomes like them. You haven't really solved the problem by saying the Hefzer Hefker. Tosafot says over here, Od yesh lomar, deyichol lehotziam chutz letchum, shezachah behem tkilah gron shelo nitkaven leskot, ve'en lo latzmo v'acherim v'hagbato, ela bashishutim. He says, tonight, when he picked it up, and he says that, I'm not acquiring it, I'm not taking possession of it except for the part that I drink. Whatever I drink, of course I'm taking possession of it, but otherwise, it's not taking possession, it remains Hefker. So that's how he keeps it in the realm of Hefker. It's how you maintain the Hefker, despite the fact that you have someone picking it up, seemingly taking possession of it and changing it from the status of Hefker. Do the Mishnah, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. Mishnah should be familiar to us, because this is something that showed up in the first parak in Shabbat, and we spoke about it then. Hayak Koreb Sefer Al Iskopa. He's reading a Sefer on threshold. Now this Iskopa, the Gemara is going to get back to what exactly this Iskopa is, where is it found, what's the size of it, but let's just assume that it's a threshold of some sort that sits between the private domain and the public domain.
Like
right, threshold of the doorway. But the question is the size, where it is, and that the Gemara will deal with in order to understand this case. And the sefer that he's holding his hand rolled out of his hand. Go low, it's low, that he can roll it back to himself. Now, as Rashi points out, all their sfarim, and I like, well, you have books today, but their sfarim, all their sfarim are made like, he says like Sifrei Torah, but the truth is it's more like a Megillah, which is that it's rolled onto one side, but we have it here that it's rolled. So what happens if the Sefer falls out of his hand, but he's still holding a part of it in his hand. So it's unrolling or unraveling, but he can roll it back to himself, so that he's allowed to do. Hayakore Rosh Hagag, if he's on the roof, Nitgalgala Sefer Miyado, and then it also rolled out of his hand, Ad Shlo Yigiala Asarat Fachim. As long as it's not within 10 Fachim of the ground, go below it so he can bring it back in. Shigiala Asarat Fachim of Kol Aktav, if he reaches to under 10 Fachim, he flips it over, and he has to leave it. Of course, Octav to protect it, so it won't be Bizayon. Can't roll it back is because under 10 Tefachim is already part of the Rishut Rabim. So until above the 10 Tefachim, you're in a Makom Ptur, so we don't worry about you rolling it back. As soon as it goes below that amount, you're into the Rishut Rabim. We're not going to bring it back up to the Rishut Yechid, which is the Gag. So that's the first statement, the statement of the Tana Kama. Then we have a disagreement, which Yehuda Omer, Afilo Ein Mesulak Ben Aretz Elo Kemlo Hamachat, that even if it's off the ground, a size of a needle, a hair's breadth, or the other Kirsa ears, Elo Kemlo Achut, a string's breadth. So the same idea. We allow you to roll it back, go low, it's low. You can bring it back in. As long as it doesn't touch the ground, we have no problem with you bringing it back to yourself. Then Rabbi Shimon, a third opinion, says, Filo Bar, it's small. Even if it reaches the ground, go low, it's low. Shein lecha davar mishum shvut, or maybe fnei kitvei HaKodesh. Didn't the Rabbanon doesn't stand in front of kitvei HaKodesh. Over here, you have kitvei HaKodesh, which are going to be bizayon if you leave them there. And rolling it back to you is only a din de Rabbanan, because it never has a proper akira and hanacha. It's still in your hand. The other half of it's still in your hand, and it never has hanacha in the Rishut Rabim. So to roll it back to you is only an isur de Rabbanan, because you're only performing one side of the issue of akira and hanacha. And because of that, we'll waive that isur de Rabbanan when it comes to bizoy kitvei HaKodesh. Even though we've seen before in the Gemara in Shabbat, the Mishnah in Shabbat of Kol Kitvei HaKodesh, and when you have a fire, the Chachamim were Omei Divrayim B'makom Kitvei HaKodesh. Here, obviously, it has to relate to what we're talking about over here, which is the Kitvei HaKodesh, and we left Bizayon. And we don't want them left to be Bizayon, so we allow you to roll them in, even though normally we wouldn't allow you to do such a thing. All right, we'll stop over here.